Welcome to the Reimagining Podcast with Theodore Richards. The Reimagining Podcast is a production of Wisdom Projects Incorporated, a 501c3 nonprofit organization, which includes the Baltimore Wisdom Project and the Chicago Wisdom Project. Our shared mission is to reimagine education and reimagine the world by enhancing the lives of youth and adults with holistic education, intercultural understanding, and anti-oppressive, liberationist thought leadership.
The war on drugs has been described as a war on black and brown people, a continuation of social control and the caste system that was previously enforced through slavery and Jim Crow. For decades, black and brown communities were decimated by policies that put thousands upon thousands of non-violent offenders in prison while fomenting violence and poverty in the communities they left behind. Cannabis is a plant that has been used for thousands of years for healing and recreational purposes, particularly in non-Western settings. As Western medicine finally catches up, as communities rise up to change the racist policies of the drug war, there are opportunities to restore some of the wealth that was stolen from black and brown communities through these policies. But the early days of legal cannabis has been dominated by wealthy white men and big corporations. The question remains, will this plant not only be used to heal individuals suffering from myriad ills, both mental and physical, but will it also be a means of allowing those to benefit who led the fight for legalization and who suffered the most during the drug war? Is there a place for a black woman in the cannabis industry, or will it only be a means of further enriching white men? Increasingly, we are learning that the pathway to healing, socially, physically, mentally, and spiritually, is more complex than the pharmaceutical industry would have us think. Modern medicine is catching up to the holistic wisdom of traditional medicine. Indeed, our healing is never really individual. We are learning that we have co-evolved with plants, like cannabis, with whom we share an interconnected web of chemical and genetic bonds. Ariane Richards, founder of Chicago Cannabis Concierge, is an advocate for social equity in cannabis, a personal cannabis consultant and educator, and certified professional interpreter, which is a cannabis sommelier. She has a degree in African American studies and worked as a community activist and educator since the 90s. The former rites of passage and summer camp director at Chicago Wisdom Project, she currently sits on the board of Wisdom Projects Incorporated. Today, she has combined her lifelong love of and commitment to her people with her passion for cannabis to dedicate herself to destigmatizing, legalizing, and educating about cannabis in order to give equal access to the emerging industry and to create opportunities for underrepresented communities. She's a member of the Chicago Normal Legislative Committee and is working to build relationships with lawmakers to create more equitable and just laws in cannabis in Illinois. Ariane is the mother of three daughters and, after having lived in Asheville, North Carolina, New York City, and Oakland, California, has returned to live on the south side of Chicago, where she was born and raised. Ariane Richards, welcome to Reimagining.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Well, just so everyone knows, we are married. So, I invited you on because there's this emerging industry and really like shifting culture in our world today in which this thing that was stigmatized and made illegal for so many years is now becoming legal. And with it, there's been a process of attempting to rectify and transform the way people think about cannabis in our world. And you've been at the forefront of that movement here in Chicago and in Illinois. So before we get into the legal stuff and in your personal work, I wanted to just start with just by asking you to talk a little bit about the plant, because I think sometimes we talk about so many other things, we forget that cannabis is actually a plant. So talk a little bit about what is cannabis? What actually is the plant?
So cannabis is a plant that's grown on this planet for over 20 million years, and it's evolved in different environments. You definitely have different varieties that thrive in certain terroirs. Mm-hmm. Hemp and cannabis are the same plant. A lot of people think that they're not, but they are because they have the same taxonomy. Hemp has a lower THC content than cannabis. Mm-hmm. So that's the difference. Hemp will have less than 0.03% of THC.
So you couldn't get high from smoking hemp.
Right. You can't get high from smoking hemp. Hemp is basically used mostly for fiber, textiles, paper.
Mm-hmm. Does hemp have any medicinal purposes, or is it only used for the fiber?
It's pretty much only used for the fiber.
Okay.
And then you have the plant itself with cannabis. Was used in ancient Egypt. There's actually one of the Egyptian goddesses, I can't remember her name, she actually has a cannabis heart over a cannabis leaf over her heart.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was used for depression in Egypt, postpartum in a lot of different ancient civilizations like Mesopotamia, China, Africa. And a lot of it was used for women's health, menstrual cramps, childbirth to hasten the process of contractions, mm-hmm. nausea, and postpartum. And there's a lot of stigma around that because it's like, oh, pregnancy, you shouldn't be using anything during pregnancy. But there's also these prescription drugs that women are prescribed that have some side effects that maybe you don't want to deal with either.
Right. And that's an interesting thing that we have. I mean, anything that you use has some sort of side effect, any kind of drug. I think like an interesting question is what makes one thing, this plant that's been used for, I guess, thousands of years by human beings, right? So what makes that plant an illegal drug, whereas we have all these other drugs, which are often created in laboratories, not necessarily, but many are, and those are considered okay, even though they have like really serious side effects, talking about like, you know, women in childbirth or pregnant women. There have been a lot of things that women have taken that are by the pharmaceutical industry that have been harmful. How do we get to thinking of cannabis as an illegal drug? I think of having grown up 80s and into the 90s, even though many of us were smoking weed a lot, it's still in our minds, I think, because we've been taught that it was in the category of like illegal drug in the same way that like cocaine or meth or something would be. Like, how do we get to think of it that way?
Yeah, so I'm going to go back even further, way further than that. So cannabis was introduced to Latin America by the Spanish in the 16th century. And the production of cannabis was promoted over the indigenous crops of the land, and mixed that with Christianity, it inhibited native folks to use their ceremonial plants that they were already growing for their ceremonies.
Right.
So it was mainly being produced for fiber, which I want to say is definitely a more sustainable way to make products because it grows faster than any trees or other crops. So it's definitely a sustainable material. So, but Native folks found that they could use cannabis for their ceremonies, and they were able to mask it so the colonizers wouldn't necessarily know that they were using it for those purposes. And so that in itself is a revolutionary practice that they were doing. So it was also included in spiritual practices in Mexico. And the word marijuana was introduced into the United States between 1910 and 1920 when Mexicans were immigrating to the US, escaping the Mexican Revolution. Also US soldiers were coming back. And it wasn't until the 30s where the word marijuana itself was being used as a negative term to demonize cannabis and promote racism, essentially, against Mexicans.
It was associated with Mexicans,
right?
Yeah.
So it's clear that cannabis wasn't the issue because it was just clearly a racist agenda that people in power were using as a scare tactic.
Before that, for a long time, hadn't hemp been grown by large-scale farmers in the United States before that?
By the mid-1600s, hemp was a huge part of the economy in New England, Maryland, and Virginia. And Kentucky, Illinois, Missouri, and Florida were also key states in hemp production. And Kentucky was the largest producer by the 1700s of hemp. And guess who cultivated the hemp? Enslaved Africans.
Mm-hmm.
And also farmers were even allowed to pay their taxes with hemp. So it was a very valuable product.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of eerie when you think about that enslaved people were cultivating this product that was making the same fiber that was used to make rope for lynching, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, and I don't want to jump ahead too far here, but it gets deeper because now we've created this stigma about it because it's associated with Mexicans, right? And then that was in the sort of the early 1900s.
Oh yeah, and it was also associated with your jazz musicians
too, right? Yeah, you know? You see that in a lot of the it was in that film, that Billie Holiday film that was a big part of that. Right, yeah. And so as we jump ahead, you know, it wasn't until later that we had sort of this full-scale attack on on Black and brown people, Black and brown communities through the drug war. And that comes about a few decades later, right? Yeah. So say a little bit about that. Like,
the stigma never disappeared once it started, you know? And then you go into reefer madness and it makes you act crazy. It makes you want to jump out of buildings and being used to promote racism as well. And you have your major political players involved with it because it was all about just demonizing Black and brown communities.
Right. And of course, some of that was already happening, but then how did that shift? You went from still demonizing cannabis, but how do we get to, and I'm really kind of interested in just the symbolism of it, how you had enslaved Africans growing hemp and people being lynched with ropes made of hemp. And then this kind of full-scale attack, assault on the Black community specifically going, I guess, in the early 70s, like with Nixon, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how did that change, or how did that affect your community?
Well, okay, so we live in a community here on the south side of Chicago that's considered a disproportionately impacted area. And those boundaries came into play when Illinois was figuring out who was going to be eligible for social equity status. And so basically those disproportionately impacted areas are areas of our city that pretty much have nothing thriving in it, you know, where we've been affected by this war on drugs. And it trickles down to other things, employment, housing, everything. And we can just look out of our window and walk right up here on 71st Street and we can see the impact that is created in our community.
Yeah.
You know, you see a totally different thing when you go to other communities. It's funny because the way that the lines are drawn for the disproportionately impacted areas on the South Side anyway, you pretty much have every South Side neighborhood in that boundary except for Hyde Park and Beverly. But pretty much every other South Side community is listed as a disproportionately impacted area.
And for people who don't know Chicago, we're talking about, most people are somewhat familiar, the South Side of Chicago is largely Black. And those communities you're referring to, Hyde Park and Beverly, are two of the wealthier and at least more integrated, more of a mixed community, you know, where there are more white people than in some of the other parts of the South Side. Yeah. So, and what this means is rather than investing in these communities, they've invested in policing and arresting more Black people in these communities. There's fewer jobs, fewer investment in all kinds of different services, more holistic services. But there's this heavy emphasis on policing and arrest, because correct me if I'm wrong, but there's no evidence that as far as like cannabis consumption recreationally, even if we get out of this ridiculousness of it being illegal, but there's no evidence that Black or brown people use it more than white people, correct? Like it's
absolutely.
Yeah.
There's no evidence that supports it at all.
Yeah. However, the evidence does support that way, way disproportionately, Black and brown people are arrested, incarcerated, also like serve longer sentences, all those things for that.
I mean, you have people who've been locked up for having less than an eighth, which is 3.5 grams, that have gotten sentenced to crazy amount of years.
Yeah.
You know, the good thing is that we're seeing the fight for that happen. There's organizations out here like the Last Prisoner Project that are fighting against folks being locked up for this right here. You know, I was lucky when we were in Miami, when I went to a event, I got to meet two of the guys who were once in prison. And it just sounds absolutely ridiculous that anybody goes to prison for cannabis, especially considering that the US built its part of its economy off of this plant.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, but there is like a cruel logic to it when you follow the thread of the nation's founding on white supremacy mm-hmm. and follow that thread and really understand it, like understanding that there's a thread that connects the experience of, even you go far back as to see how the indigenous people whose crops were displaced by cannabis, mm-hmm. there's sort of an mm-hmm. irony in that. And then seeing how people looked upon Mexicans coming into this country, which actually in many cases was their country first, which we had taken during wars with Mexico. And then seeing how we moved from enslavement to Jim Crow to mass incarceration. I mean, there's a thread there that, mm-hmm. that kind of makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely a thread.
So you've been really active in this movement to, at least in relation to cannabis specifically, to rectify some of those injustices, and your role as in this movement for social equity and other things, specifically here in Chicago and in Illinois in general. So we're going to take a quick break and then talk about your own experiences in that world, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Our statement of intent. One, the planet and humanity are at a moment of crisis and opportunity and of transition. Two, because we are entering into an unknown future, imagination is paramount. Three, this moment requires new stories, new narratives, new creative works that express this reimagining. Four, we believe that these narratives must challenge and confront the injustices of our day. Five, crisis of the moment is an educational crisis. That is, we must reimagine educational processes in order to reimagine our narratives. Six, we welcome educators, poets, philosophers, activists, and writers who are interested in reimagining ourselves and our relationship to the planet. Seven, reimagining is a place not so much to find quick answers or definitive solutions, rather it is a place to ask big questions, to explore possibilities, and to imagine a new world. You can find more about our work at www.reimaginingmagazine.com and more about our broader mission at www.chicagowisdomproject.org and www.baltimorewisdomproject.org.
I'm talking today to Ariane Richards, who, among other things, is what's called a certified interpreter. And I feel like, as I said in the very beginning, in addition to your wisdom in this, it's really interesting that I'm learning all these new things talking to you. So tell me a little more about what that means, a certified interpreter, which we've described as kind of like cannabis sommelier, right? And yes. Say a little more about that.
So interpreting is the science of evaluating cannabis flower to determine the quality, the variety type, and its psychotropic effects. And you do that through physical inspection and through aromatic.
Mm-hmm. And the flower, it just for people who don't smoke, flower is just like the stuff that you'd make a joint out of or put right. into your, yeah, yeah.
And so it's called interpreting because the plant has terpenes. Many plants have terpenes, which are the different aromas that you get from plants. Mm. And they also have an effect. Like people will think, when they're shopping for cannabis, they're like, oh, I want the stuff with the highest THC content.
Right.
No, you necessarily don't, because what you get is what's called an entourage effect. When you have THC, your different terpenes, and maybe as well as CBD. And so they all work with each other to deal with the ailment or whatever it is that you might be dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And
CBD is the stuff that people use for like medicinal purposes, like make some topicals and stuff like that.
Yeah. And CBD doesn't get you high.
Yeah.
It doesn't get you high. So you can have the same effects if you're smoking something with THC, like say you're dealing with anxiety, you can take CBD, but you're not going to get high from it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which if you're dealing with anxiety, hey, you probably don't want to. You know,
right.
Or be very careful about what it is that you're smoking. But the important part about interpreting is the fact that you want to know what you are ingesting is quality. You inspect for mold, bugs, nutrient lock, and just a lot of different things you don't want to ingest mold.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And when I became certified, I remember going to a vending event and I bought some herb. And when I got home, I remember looking up under it, there were bugs And I just kind of had to laugh, like, how often
makes you think about some of the stuff you smoked over the years.
Crap, you know. And it's like, oh, okay.
But that is one of the benefits of legalization too, right?
It is one of the benefits, because more regulated, it can be regulated
and more transparent. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
more transparent. Yeah. Now, labs don't test for like the actual quality. What they're testing for is what's used in it. The terpenes, they're doing that profile. You know, you're getting a terpene profile, which is definitely very helpful if you're looking for a strain that is particular to your ailment.
It's part of what you're looking at when you look at how with your own natural chemistry, mm-hmm. right? So part of what you're looking at is how that interaction occurs. And so because it is a plant that you said it has been, I think you said 20 million years mm-hmm. that this plant has been on the planet, a lot longer than we have been.
Right.
You know, so we've evolved, we've co-evolved on the planet with, mm-hmm. with all these different plants and animals that we interact with or ingest. So it does make it kind of a different thing from something that you've developed in a laboratory, right?
There's
a
right. different. So our bodies have the endocannabinoid system, which wasn't discovered until the 1990s. It's no different from our respiratory system, our circulatory system. It is a biological system that's composed of endocannabinoids, which are neurotransmitters that bind to cannabinoid receptors. And those are the proteins present in the central nervous system. So a lot of people don't even realize we make naturally in our bodies what cannabis has.
Mm.
So unfortunately, there's not enough research that's been done on the endocannabinoid system. But what they do know is that it regulates sleep, mood, appetite, memory, reproduction, and fertility. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I'm an expert on the endocannabinoid system, but it's something that's truly interesting. And I recommend, if it's something you want to know more about, you can go to drknox.com, where it's these two sisters.
Mm-hmm.
who basically do all this research on the endocannabinoid system. And their aim is to change how we're being medically treated.
Right.
So I think that they are doing some groundbreaking work. I definitely fangirl them. I just think they're amazing. And I'm not sure which sister it is, but she has a TED Talk that I'm sure if you just Googled on YouTube, you would find it.
I mean, I would imagine there's some obstacles to some of the research over the years. I mean, it's probably, a lot of it's probably new because of it's illegal and stigmatized, right?
Schedule 1.
Yeah.
With it being a Schedule 1 drug, you know, which is at the top of the. Yeah.
So other drugs that are Schedule 1 are like cocaine, the fun stuff.
Very dangerous
heroin,
things.
Right?
Yes.
Those things? Yeah, right.
Yeah. So it makes no sense. It's actually a huge joke. But yeah, a lot of research hasn't been able to be done on it because it's a Schedule 1 drug.
Right. So what are some things though, with the limited research so far, and like, what are some things that we talked about kind of traditional uses of cannabis, but like what are, in terms of like today and the scene today, like what are some things that people are using cannabis for, like as far as treatment goes, that at least there's some support for in terms of like modern Western medicine.
Right. So it's definitely used to deal with pain management.
Right.
Find a lot of people that don't want to take your opioids to deal with pain because you don't want to give up, you don't want to trade a temporary illness or something for an addiction.
Right.
What's the point of that?
And cannabis does not have that physically addicting quality, like opioids.
Exactly. Yeah. Here in Illinois, there's basically a whole program where if you're prescribed opioids, you can get a card super fast, because if you don't want to take opioids, can get a medicinal
as an alternative. Yeah.
So that's one of the huge things, is like pain management. Also, as we know, it's been used for epilepsy in children as well, which is amazing. You hear these people tell stories about how their kids were having seizures like several times a day. And those, and once their children are taking cannabis, however it's prescribed, they notice that these seizures have went down dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for myself as a medical patient, I have a script for it because of PTSD. I don't even think I realized how much PTSD I was dealing with until I was diagnosed in order to get my card. Here in Illinois, there's a very small set of, or a very small set of reasons.
Sure, yeah.
A list for what you can get medicinal. Diagnoses that qualify. I was a medical patient in California, and I got to tell you.
The list is longer.
I don't think there is a list. you know, I'm pretty sure there isn't a list.
California.
Yes, California. Yeah, you know, we got Humboldt County. That would even sound even
better. I've encountered in my own experience, you know, anecdotally, like for sure, soldiers, or former soldiers who use it for PTSD
that
as well.
Like
I've met people who've done that.
Yeah. That's a story I have heard
over
and over and over again is, you know, your veterans who have seen and dealt with these horrific issues and they come home, they're trying to take prescribed meds that may or may not work for them, you know, and they're playing with this cocktail trying to find the perfect one, but then they discover cannabis.
Yeah.
And they say their whole life has changed, that they've become functional people again.
Yeah.
Because of cannabis.
It's interesting because the United States military, surely it's not true for everyone in the military, but the United States military has been involved in the drug war and has used its military might to, you know,
enforce
the drug laws, particularly in Latin America, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in addition to allowing access for people who could use cannabis medicinally or recreationally, the law in Illinois and in some other places as well, but we'll talk a little more specifically about Illinois because that's where you are in your own experience. The law in Illinois was created intentionally to try to not only allow people to be able to use cannabis, but also it's made allowances for what they've called social equity, right? Which is like a way to kind of remedy some of the injustices in the past with the drug war and also change access presently because people such as yourself are largely, in spite of all of the history of the impact of the drug war on you and your community, have been really kind of left out, right?
Yeah. And I do believe Illinois had extremely good intentions when they created this. But if you've been watching what's going on, you know it's been a little bit of a mess right now. The social equity piece, you know, you definitely always find your people who find loopholes. You know,
And say a little bit more what that is. Like,
well, in order to qualify as a social equity applicant for dispensaries or a craft grow infusion license, you either have to live in a disproportionately impacted area,
right?
Or you've had to have a past cannabis arrest that's eligible for expungement. Or this was the one that a lot of either 51% of your employees have to qualify as either live in a disproportionately impacted area or an arrest. So you had a lot of companies who had that money, who were able to actually hire people. I believe it was, they had to have at least, I think, 10 people on their workforce team.
I see.
So you had a lot of places that were using that as a way to get into the social equity game, which I personally feel like that should not have been.
Yeah. So even though the law was supposed to be for people in communities that were impacted by the drug war, right? Even though that was the intention behind the law, at least that's what everyone was told. A lot of people who ended up applying for those licenses were what? They were like big companies who already were in the game, right?
Yeah. Some of them were. I was able to get a peek. Not a peek. Well, it was released by this publication Grown In, and they had the list of everyone who applied for the dispensary licenses and where they scored.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting looking at this list because I definitely saw some very familiar companies that had zero business applying as social equity applicants. Right. Where when I went and looked at their scores for what they got for they're 50 points for social equity. And it's like, how? How did you do that? You're already in the game here. You already have the money to play.
Right.
You know, so it's challenging right now because here we are in May of 2021. And it was literally a year ago when we were supposed to find out who would be eligible for the lottery to get a cannabis dispensary license. So here we are a year later, and we're still waiting.
Yeah.
The state has decided to do a rescoring process. So now we're just waiting to see what that looks like.
So as a Black woman applying for this with you have a business partner and the two of you, and you're just regular people on the South Side of Chicago who have experienced, if not directly, in some cases directly, but also just like as being part of a community that's affected. And I think it's like easy to underestimate how impactful the drug war is on a whole community. You don't have to have a personal arrest even to have been impacted by that, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, like
and another qualifying factor mm-hmm. is if you've had a relative, like a parent, an immediate relative who mm-hmm. had been arrested.
Okay. Yeah. So you're in that position, like you're legitimately sort of like following the rules,
mm-hmm.
right? And like, what's that been like for you and watching how this is unfolded, you know, like
it's frustrating. You know, when the list came out, I forget how many companies it was, but it wasn't very many. Now, there are some companies there who truly belong there, but then there are others that do not. It's a joke that the former superintendent of the police department here in Chicago, whose tenure during that time was during the drug war,
right,
was able to qualify as a social equity applicant because he lives in a disproportionately impacted area.
Right.
You know, it becomes a joke at a certain point.
Right.
So it, for lack of better words, it pisses me off, you know?
Yeah.
And here we are, Black and brown folks, we're basically just kind of looking for the crumbs.
Yeah.
Because you have these big companies who are dominated by white men who are in this game, who some probably never even smoked weed a day in their life, who are just making hand over fist right now.
Yeah.
And they're constantly just making this money because licenses have not been awarded yet.
Yeah. It feels like kind of part of the story of America, isn't it though?
Yeah.
Yeah. And do you feel like it certainly isn't like the complete story of reparations, but do you feel like this fits into the question of reparations? Because I mean, reparations isn't about fixing past injustices. Those things cannot be fixed, but it is about dealing with the theft of wealth
mm-hmm.
from a community. And it's specifically addressing that economic disparity. Do you feel like this fits into that for you?
It's taking me a minute to answer that.
Okay, I caught you by surprise, you know.
Because, you know, I want to say yes and no. I say no because we should have already been at the table on this.
Mm-hmm.
And then I say yes because I guess these harms are trying to be correct. But I'm just not sure. With the way things are now in the industry, with it just being mostly white and male, it's hard to see if that will ever happen.
Yeah. So what's your vision? Because you've been involved in a variety of endeavors as far as this whole process of legalizing cannabis, both recreationally and medicinally, and you've been working with lawmakers on different aspects of that. What would you like to see change, or what's your vision or your hope in the near future for cannabis legalization?
Well, one of the things when I decided to enter the industry, what I felt was important was to align myself with organizations that I felt had the same mission,
right?
As my own personal mission as far as social equity,
yeah,
and justice goes. So I found Chicago Normal to be that organization for me. And
what's that stand for?
NORML stands for NORML is a national organization for the reform of marijuana laws.
Got it. Yeah.
Okay. And Chicago NORML is the Chicago chapter of that.
And so through your work with NORML, you're working toward specifically thinking about
specific legislation.
Legislation.
You know,
yeah.
I am on the legislative committee with them, which has been a great experience. This point, I've gotten a chance to go down to Springfield, do some lobbying, talk with some state reps, meet some, you know, NORML is definitely about action.
Yeah.
And Chicago Normal definitely does a lot of representation for the Black and Brown communities. And as a Black woman, I have found the organization to be amazing because there's Black women that are leading this organization who I watch all the time. I watch you, Edie. I watch you, Kiana. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I watch them all the time because they've been really at the forefront of this, doing this. So I have some amazing people that I've been learning from.
Yeah. You're also an amazing person, and I'm happy to learn from you today. And thanks for being on Reimagine.
Thank you for having me.
I love you.
I love you too.
The Reimagining Podcast with Theodore Richards is a production of Wisdom Projects Incorporated. Original music by Cosmos Ray. Sound engineering by Jim Qualick. Thank you for listening and for reimagining with us.